Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, open forum. If you have a question about the Catholic faith, if you have a question about what we Catholics believe, what we do, why we believe and do those things, this is your hour, 888-318-7884. If you're Catholic, you're welcome to call. If you're not Catholic, you're welcome to call. If you're not sure, you're welcome to call. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. Maybe you want to know about sacraments. Maybe you want to know about what we believe about the Bible or about Jesus himself or Mary or anything, any question you've got, we're happy to take it. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Catholic apologist, author, and speaker, Jim Blackburn. Jim is one of the speakers you can book at our Catholic Answers Speakers Bureau. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. His books include 101 Quick Questions with Catholic Answers on Marriage, Divorce, and Annulment. He's written a bunch of the 20 Answers series books, 20 Answers Scripture and Tradition, 20 Answers the Papacy, 20 Answers Homosexuality, and 20 Answers Divorce and Marriage. He's probably working on one even as we speak right now. Hi, Jim Blackburn.
Hello, Cy. Thank you for having me.
Oh, so happy to have you here. And I think we got all our technical issues straightened out from the last time where
I think so. I hope so.
We kept dropping you for some reason. It's not personal, Jim. I don't want you to think it's personal.
I have tunneled a dedicated line from my home office to Catholic Answers, and that's what we're connected by today. So we should absolutely not have any connection issues.
That is a heck of a tunnel, Jim. I'm really impressed. If you could do that.
Elon Musk helped me with the tunneling.
With his boring company?
Yes.
Which I think is a great name for a company, the Boring Company, because that's what they do, boring. I assume I think I might have asked you this last time, but for the summer, your speaking schedule is lighter than the rest of the year. Is that correct?
It typically is. So I do have a pretty open schedule right now, just a couple of things, and they're private events that I can't invite others to. But it's really open. I'm available all summer long.
So if I just wanted an apologist to come speak at my private event, like, I don't know, like I'm having a backyard barbecue and I wanted an apologist, you could come and talk? Like you could come and give a talk on?
Absolutely. I've never actually spoken at a barbecue, but I've spoken at birthday parties. In fact, there was an elderly woman one time who her kids asked her what she wants for her 80th birthday. And she said, I'd like to have an apologist come. Have the whole family here, have an apologist come and tell all my kids and grandkids why everybody needs to be Catholic. And I went and I spent a couple hours with the family, and it was just an amazing time.
So that is such a blessing.
Any reason you can think of, yeah.
That's a blessing for them, but what a blessing for you that you got to share the good news in that way with a family.
I enjoyed it immensely, and I always do any place I go and speak. So any reason, it can be small group, large group, yeah. I love it.
All right, so I'm going to throw an idea out at you that I think that you'll agree with this idea. I just want to see if you do. Jesus makes your life better.
Yes.
You're on board with that?
Yeah.
I thought so, Jim. I thought you
without hesitation.
Actually, there was a little hesitation, and I don't know what that was. That was a technical thing or what, but there was a moment where you're like, is there more to this? Maybe that's what you're waiting for more.
I do have a gardener named Jesus, for a brief second, I thought you might be talking about him. But even if you were, he does a decent job, so he makes my life better too.
I'm happy to hear it. Jim,
sure.
I don't know what to make of that. I found out last time you were on here too that you are a twin, an identical twin.
Identical twin.
And this bothers me now, though. How do I know that I'm actually talking to Jim Blackburn?
Because my brother's name is Jeff.
Okay. I'm going to try to sneak in, hey, Jeff, on you later and see if you respond. That is coming up. But you won't
be
prepared.
See.
I'm going to do it all of a sudden. You will not be prepared.
Okay.
There's a guy named James in Las Cruces, New Mexico, listening on Guadalupe Radio who'd like to talk with you. Jim Blackburn, are you ready to take a call?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, James in Las Cruces, you are on with Jim Blackburn. Your question, please.
Thank you so much, Brother Sly. I appreciate your ministries very much.
Thank you.
My wife suffered a stroke a couple of years ago, and she's stable. She's very weak, but she's also has some mild dementia because of it, and suffers to go to, now she needs to go to dialysis. And it's our cross, and I accept it, and I continue to care for her. I've been married with her for 51 years. My question is, this past Sunday, as we received our Eucharist, they come to and give it to us. We sit in the back because she can't, you know, she can't walk very well. And since I believe that it is the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord, after consuming it, I was sitting there meditating, and then I thought, well, Lord, we both have you physically. Why doesn't a physical healing occur? Because we've just consumed you, and you touched people, and they got healed. And it was just a crazy question in my mind. I said, I don't mean to insult you, Lord, but I'm just curious. If we're consuming you, and you're physically in us, why doesn't healing occur?
Okay, James. First, let me extend my prayers for your wife and your. I can tell you that you seem to have a great attitude about it. You know, you're right. You see it as a cross. And a cross is something that, you know, Jesus said we all need to take up our crosses and follow him. And I think if you're asking God to have your suffering and your wife's suffering combined with his suffering on the cross and the suffering of other saints, that good can come from it. The greatest good that ever came into the world came through suffering, the suffering of Christ on the cross. So it's great that you have that perspective on this. Now, why don't the sacraments, and say in particular, why does not the Eucharist heal us physically? This is a question that I've been approached with from time to time, and I like to start by pointing out that that's not really what the sacraments are for. If we go back to the beginning of man and we see the fall, God tells Adam and Eve, you know, that if they eat of the forbidden fruit, that they will die. And the serpent tells them, "Oh, you won't die." And they eat of it, and from their perspective, they didn't die; they were still alive. But we know that, in fact, they did die. They died spiritually. They died a spiritual death, and that's the primary loss that we have because of original sin. We do not have supernatural life within us. They could not pass on supernatural life to their offspring. That's what the sacraments are for. Jesus came that we may have life and have it abundantly, as we're told in John's gospel. And that type of life that he came to bring us is that supernatural life, the spiritual life that was lost in the fall. We get that first through baptism. We receive it more abundantly through the other sacraments. In John chapter 6, Jesus tells his disciples that unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you have no life within you. Now, these people were living, but they were spiritually dead, and they needed the Eucharist for the spiritual life. So rest assured, James, that if your wife is receiving the Eucharist in a worthy manner, she is receiving life abundantly, but it's supernatural life that she's receiving. And supernatural life is much, much more, infinitely more important than physical life here on earth. God allows suffering, and if we ask God to combine our own suffering for good, the good may come of it, that can happen. And but what we need to realize when we're receiving the sacraments is that we're receiving and building up supernatural life within us that will carry us on then for eternity. Okay, James, I hope that helps.
Very good. Yeah, well, you just added a block to my little foundation of faith. God did some repair work, and I really appreciate it.
Fantastic.
James, thank you so much. Very much appreciate that. And our prayers for your wife and for you as you struggle, as you said, with that cross that you carry. 888-318-7884 is the number. Mr. Blackburn, I think we need to take a break. Is that all right, Jeff? Oh, so close. I almost had you. All right, we'll take a break.
Nice try.
You almost went for it, though. We'll be right back. We'll be right back after this with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live with Jeff Blackburn.
Catholic. Answers Live.
Summer is upon us, and though the temperatures are going up, the prices are coming down during Catholic Answers' first ever summer book sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, dozens of great books are available for $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. This is the time to load up on solid Catholic books for you, your friends, and your family. The spectacular online event offers savings of 50% and more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of esteemed authors, evangelists, and apologists. We've even got all of the books in our Catholic Answers Classics series marked down. Log on now to shop.catholic.com and take advantage of what will be one of the most exciting sales of the summer. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers. Log on to shop.catholic.com and start saving today.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm really excited to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got right now on subscriptions of our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. Sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll give you a digital subscription of the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or by logging online to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription, and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. But better yet, become a two-year subscriber, and we'll up the ante by dropping the price by $20. That's a savings of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now because this is our best offer of the year, and it's only available for a limited time. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and it is open forum today. If you have a question about the Catholic faith, whether you are Catholic or not, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Our guest, as far as I know, is Jim Blackburn, apologist extraordinaire, longtime apologist here at Catholic Answers. Now a Catholic Answers speaker and author of many, many fine books and all around great, but somewhat devious guy. So,
no, Cy, you're just imagining that. My twin and I are identical twins, but it's been very rare in our history that we have, you know, pulled a switch on somebody. In fact, it's happened more times unintentionally where somebody will see Jeff and think he's me, or see me and think I'm Jeff. But we're not devious about it.
Did you ever like owe somebody money though, and then they see they're like, hey, Jim Blackburn, get over here, and you're like, oh, that's my identical twin brother, Jeff.
I haven't had the occasion, but that's a good thought. I'm going to keep that in my back pocket.
And you're familiar with the whole film or TV genre of the evil twin, right? Is either of you the evil twin? I know who it is. I don't even answer that, Jim. I know who the evil one is.
Can we just take some calls now?
Yes, let's take some calls. Derek in Dallas, Texas, listening on 9:10 a.m. You're probably talking to Jim Blackburn. Your question, please. Derek? Hello?
Hello, this is in Baton Rouge.
Oh, I apologize. We must have had a little – sometimes the phone lines get crossed when someone hangs up and another calls. Your first name, please?
Anonymous, please.
Anonymous. And you are actually on the air with Jim Blackburn. Do you have a question for him?
Yes, please. I have two questions in regards spiritual warfare and the ministry of exorcism in our church. I was wondering about how many dioceses in the United States have exorcists appointed by the bishop. And the other thing is, it seems that the identity of a lot of it, or the identity as far as I have been able to ascertain, is usually pretty private. In other words, it's hard to find an exorcist in the Catholic Church, and at least where I live.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I think you're looking in the right direction, though. An exorcist would be appointed by the bishop. To answer your question, how many dioceses in the United States have exorcists assigned to them? That I don't know. I know that one of the 20 answers booklets that's out right now is concerns exorcism, and the author of that booklet may take up some of those kinds of questions. I'd encourage you to read it if you're interested in exorcism anyway. In fact, I think I did a review on that when it was being written and just thought it was excellent addition to the 20 answer series. But exorcism is something that we don't want to take lightly. The church, before the church would ever enter into a situation where they believe that demons are involved in possession or something like that is taking place, and an exorcist is necessary, the church is going to investigate and rule out physical, psychological types of any type of natural possible explanation for what's occurring before it jumps to the conclusion that there's something preternatural, say, demonic going on. And so we shouldn't be quick ourselves to assume that that's the case when we see something happening. You know, mental health resources should be exhausted. Medical, physical health resources should be exhausted before we jump to a conclusion that there's something demonic going on. Then if we're concerned that may be the case, we should take it to the bishop, contact the bishop about it, have the bishop would likely assign someone to investigate it if he deems that it's necessary to do so before any sort of intervention by an exorcist would take place. But I encourage you, if this is a topic that you're interested in, pick up a copy of that 20 Answers booklet on Cy, you may know the full title to it, but I know it has something to do with exorcism.
I'm going to have to look it up because I'm drawing a blank in my little tiny brain right now. So Anonymous, thanks so much for the call, though. Appreciate it. I'm glad you got through by surprise there and had such a nice, clear question for us. We appreciate it. We go now to Cliff in Colorado, listening on 1060 AM. Cliff, your question for apparently Jim Blackburn.
Yeah, it's a coincidence because it's on the same topic as your previous caller. Okay. I actually have two questions, which is, are all demons fallen angels, or is there some other type of supernatural being that's in the mix? And similarly, are there things that people can do that make them more or less susceptible to possession, such as use by a Ouija board, for example?
Okay, yeah, great questions. As far as supernatural beings, or I should say spiritual beings, who can tempt us to sin or try to lead us into sin, those are what we would call demons, and those are fallen angels. They're created. We see in the book of Revelation that there was a great war in heaven, and a third of the angels fell, and so we assume today that the demons come from that bunch that fell when the angels were created. But the angel or fallen angels or demons are not the only source of temptation and the only source of something that would call us into sin. You know, we have our own fallen nature. I mentioned to an earlier caller that when Adam and Eve sinned, we lost supernatural life and the ability to pass that on, but we also gained what's called concupiscence. It means an attraction to sin, an inclination towards sin, and we all may be attracted to different sins, but we're all attracted to something that we shouldn't be attracted to, that's unhealthy for us and can be unholy for us. So our own fallen nature, our own sinful inclinations or inclinations towards sin are something that can lead us away from God as well. And then thirdly, we have demons, we have ourselves, we also have other human beings who can lead us into temptation. You know, Jesus said, woe to him who would lead the least of my children away from me. It would be better for him to have a millstone wrapped around his neck and be thrown into the depths of the ocean. So we can lead each other into sin. We can lead each other away from God, away from Christ. We don't want to do that, but we need to be aware that others can be a source of temptation for us as well. So when we consider those three sources, those are really the three main sources we need to consider. You know, ourselves, our own inclinations, others who might, whether intentionally or not, lead us astray. And then thirdly, and this would seem to be the least common of the three, would be the potential for demonic, not necessarily possession, but demonic temptation to somehow lead us away from Christ. So I hope that helps with the first part of your question. What was the second part? If I could ask you to maybe repeat the second part.
Sure. It is, are there things that people can do that make them more or less susceptible to possession in the traditional
yes.
sense, such as use
yes.
of a Ouija board?
And that's a good one to bring up. In fact, there have been warnings that have been issued by theologians and people in the church who have warned against doing anything like playing a game, such as a supposed game, that would open us up. Anytime we open our will to let a spiritual entity into our lives to influence us, even if what we might be doing when we're playing with a Ouija board is looking for past loved ones who have died to see if we can communicate with them. We know that's wrong, by the way. The Catechism says we're not supposed to do that. We see from Scripture that this is a dangerous thing. We're not to try to communicate with the dead. But when we open ourselves, when children in particular open themselves up to this, thinking that it's harmless, it can be very harmful because we don't know who might respond to that. Might God allow a deceased individual to communicate with us? It's a possibility. I mean, we see saintly apparitions. We see apparitions of Mary. But that's not something that we should be seeking out. If that's something God wants for us, God will help make that happen without our trying to make it happen ourselves. But if we are opening ourselves up to these kinds of things, we might not know who it is that's responding to us. And the demons could be very manipulative and devious, to borrow a word from Psy, to make us think that what's happening is all good and right, but they're going to lead us astray, and that would be their intention. So these kinds of things, anything that would open our will to demons is a very dangerous thing, and we must stay away from that and teach our children to stay away from it. And a Ouija board is a good example of that, Cliff.
Okay, Cliff.
Yep, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You were asking me when Anonymous was on the line about the 20 Answers book. It's just called Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons, okay.
Yeah, I had completely forgot. It was one of the first 20 Answers booklets. Angels and Demons, if you'd like to get that, you just go to shop.catholic.com today. Oh, and I should, if you don't mind, Jim, I will remind people that there's the big June sale going on at shop.catholic.com right now. DVDs, books, all kinds of stuff, 50% off. There's a little banner at the bottom of the page when you go to shop.catholic.com. And it says, $10, $5, $1. There's all these items on sale. Stuff by Jimmy Akin, stuff by Tim Staples, stuff by Gary Matuda, Matt Frad, a whole bunch of others. You just go to shop.catholic.com. You look for the $1, $5, $10 book and DVD sale banner. Click it, and you'll find all those deals. And also, everything ships, if you buy it there, at a flat rate of $5, no matter how much you buy, flat rate of $5 shipping on all of it throughout the month of June. There might even be some stuff by Jim Blackburn there available for you on sale. He is, if you don't know him, he is Jeff's brother. 888-318-7884 is our number. If you have a question for Jim Blackburn, go ahead and pick up the phone and call. I just want to let you know, Jim, on Facebook, While you were giving that answer on Ouija boards and all that, Marie on Facebook said, how about mediums? Just a quick word on that, mediums?
Yes. A medium would be, I'm assuming she's talking about someone who would attempt to conjure and communicate with a deceased loved one.
Yes.
And help us to do that, whether it be through a seance or through some sort of who knows what means. And this is something that is it's immoral. It's something the Catechism of the Catholic Church mentions, that we are not to involve ourselves in this. And maybe after the break, I'll point out a couple of catechism paragraphs that will be helpful to Marie.
Yeah, it would be really helpful too, because there's TV shows now with these mediums on there, and they're we'll talk about it when we come back. Jim Blackburn is, in fact, our guest. He's not devious, and any question you got for him on the Catholic faith is welcome.
Your number one source for Catholic apologetics and evangelization, Catholic Answers Live.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from Scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Tim Staples.
The National Catholic Register gives you the world's news like no other. Only NCR has a stable of writers steeped in good Catholic theology and philosophy to give you the news with proper perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner, or call 1-800-421-3230.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Jim Blackburn, our guest this hour. Your calls on anything having to do with the Catholic faith are welcome, because it's open forum. If you're not Catholic and you've always wondered something about Catholics, or you'd like an explanation or even a justification of something we believe as Catholics, you're welcome as well. We're happy to have a conversation with you. 888-318-7884. When we went to the break, I was asking you, because Marie had asked online, what about mediums? And I convey that question in part because I have to say, I am not delighted by the TV networks putting on these mediums who practice a form of a con that's been practiced for centuries. It's a con game. They're con artists, and they're on TV presenting themselves as people who speak to the dead. But I just wanted to get your take on what the Church says about it.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you, Cy, that I think more often than not, someone who purports to be a medium – it's a scam job. They're simply trying to to pull a wool over someone's eyes and get money for doing something that is, you know, and they've learned how to do this. They've learned how to guess what these different things might be going on in your life to try to convince you that they're real, they're authentic, the real thing. But even if we were to find the real thing, I mean, you know, believe that this is somebody who really believes in what he's doing, and he's had a history of this, we want to stay away from it. And I'd refer anyone who's interested in this to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and in particular on the commandment, "You shall have no other gods before me." This falls under this. So, you know, our God is the one true God, and we need to trust in him and follow his teachings through Christ and the Church. And one of the things that we're not to do is to try to intervene into the supernatural life, to in a sense of trying to contact the dead and these kinds of things. But the Catechism of the Catholic Church, beginning in paragraph 2110 and going forward, is what I would recommend that someone read. And in particular, paragraphs 2116 and 2117. Those deal with divination, conjuring of demons, practices that supposedly unveil the future, astrology, and then magic and sorcery and all these kinds of things. So in particular, paragraphs 2116 and 2117, but also the surrounding paragraphs, I think all put it all into context to help someone understand why it is the Church is teaching this.
All right, thank you, Marie, on Facebook for that question. We go now to Mark in Edmonton, Canada. Mark, you are on. Thanks for calling from Canada, by the way. You are on with Jim Blackburn. Your question.
Good afternoon, or evening, I guess, where you are.
It's still afternoon here. We're in California.
Oh, so, I thought you were in Houston. My mistake.
No, we get a lot of calls from Texas, though. We love that. We'd like more from Edmonton, though. So if you could encourage people in the area to start listening more, Mark, we'd appreciate it. But go ahead.
I am, believe me.
Thank you.
But it's dicey. Hey, but let's go to the epistles where Paul talked about. Now, I'm going to just give you a heads up. I'm going to paraphrase here. Okay, so I've read this in different versions of the New Testament, many different versions. So Paul goes up to, I believe it's either the seventh heaven or the third heaven,
mm-hmm.
more or less, and he wasn't sure if it was in spirit or not. And one of the things, I'm really stretching it here, he said that he couldn't believe the language they were speaking, which I'll just add, I believe certainly one of the persons up there was the Father, our Father in heaven. So anyway, what do you think might be that language?
Oh, so you're okay. Go ahead, Jim. Yeah. He's talking about Second Corinthians, I assume, right?
Yeah. And ignore that beep, beep. That's my service provider. I've been declining the call four times before you went to my call. So I know it's annoying for everybody listening, but I've been trying to decline it, and I declined it four times, and they just won't stop calling. It took me 45 minutes or an hour to get through.
All right. Well, let's get you an answer. That's okay. The beep is not distracting at all. Jim?
Yeah, I think the chapter and verses here that Mark is talking about is in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, the first several passages of that. And I'm not certain what, in particular, what translation might be being read, but I'm not sure I would understand it the same way. Could we look at this passage here for a second, Cy, and see if figure out what exactly he's talking about? When he says that he knows a man in Christ 14 years ago is caught up to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man was caught up into paradise, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know. And he heard things that cannot be told, which man may not utter. I'm wondering if that's what might be what he might be referring to. Is that the verse, do you think, Mark, that
you nailed it?
That's it. Okay,
that's what I'm referring to.
Okay, and that is it. There's many different ways this can be understood, but one of the ways is the idea. And by the way, when Paul is talking about the third heaven, you know, we see the heavens above us. We could categorize as the three different types, and that would be the sky around us where the birds fly. That would be the first heaven. The second heaven would be where we see the sun and the moon and the stars, would be the second heaven. Then the third heaven would be the dwelling of God, the in a real sense, say, the beatific vision. And it could be what Paul is talking about here is that this person experienced an experience with God. It cannot be put into words, cannot be there's no way that we in a human language or in our human expression can possibly explain this. And it's the beatific vision, of course, would be like that. You know, philosophers often mention that we only do a disservice to God by trying to describe him. You know, we can, in every way that we try to understand God and explain God, we're doing a disservice to him, because we just cannot ever accomplish an expression of his infinite goodness and power and being. It's just something that we can't do. So what I'd recommend that you do, Mark, is maybe consult a good Catholic commentary on this and read this passage maybe in different translations. Bible Gateway online is you have multiple translations. You could pull this verse up and look at it in multiple different translations, and it might make more sense to you there in that way. But that's my understanding of you're not talking about a particular language as though there's a language out there that we don't know about or that we're being told about here, so much more as it's something that's just unable to be expressed in language, something that is incomprehensible to a human mind, to our finite human minds as we exist right now. So I hope that helps some, but I'd encourage you to take a look at that with a Bible commentary to get some more insight on what different meanings Paul might be trying to express here.
Okay, Mark.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, now you can answer the phone. Thank you for the call. And that person that Paul is talking about there is himself. He's using clever language because he doesn't want to show off, right? He even says that, like, this happened to a guy. I don't want to brag, but he doesn't want to brag in himself, but it's just clever language that he's using there. Betty in Louisville, Kentucky, listening on EWTN radio. You are on with Jim Blackburn. Your question.
I don't know exactly how to ask this, so I'll get confused. When a baby's born, before he's born, is his soul intact, or is it after he's born?
Okay, well, the church teaches that at the time a human being is created, that the God creates the soul at that moment. As we would understand it, as soon as we could figure out that there is a human being there, say at conception, even you know, we would have at conception the egg and the sperm coming together and becoming, you know, physically having a DNA that's not the DNA of the mother, not the DNA of the father, but its own unique DNA, and it's alive and it's human, and so this is a new human being. So from most Catholics' perspective, we would say that that God creates that soul at the moment of conception. And that's why we as Catholics and the Catholic Church teaches that that human life must be protected from conception to natural death. So the human soul is created, I would say, Betty, at conception, and then so that baby is going to have a human soul every moment of its existence from there on, from conception onward.
Okay, Betty?
Was the child martyred when you considered the child being martyred? It was murdered, but, I mean,
you mean
in
that?
My opinion, I think God would be merciful and the child be in heaven, but I was just asking because I was sitting here wondering.
Okay, so a child aborted then is what Betty's asking about.
In the case of an aborted child.
Yeah.
First, Betty, the church, God has not revealed to the church what happens to the souls of children or infants, even in the womb, who die without baptism. Because we know ordinarily the sacrament of baptism is necessary to give us that supernatural life was lost in the fall, so that we can go on then and live supernaturally in heaven for eternity. So we know baptism is fundamentally necessary for that, at least ordinarily. But the church also recognizes there are other ways. And while we are bound to baptize our children for their sake, the sake of their eternal lives, God is not bound by the sacraments. God can save anyone he chooses to save in whatever manner he chooses to save a person. And the church, in thinking about this and studying this and teaching about this, has come to recognize that God does provide other ways. When a person who's not baptized is martyred, for example, dies for the sake of his faith, then that person would receive what the church would call baptism of blood. And that's it would give that person the benefits, the fruits of baptism, or at least the sanctifying grace that would come ordinarily first through baptism. That person would receive that because God's providing it to him. There's a third type of baptism called baptism of desire, where as a person one place the church uses this today is in the teaching of catechumens. When you've got someone who's not baptized but wants to become Catholic, the church doesn't immediately baptize that person. The person would go generally through an RCIA program, which could take a year to 2 years, and at the end of that would be baptized. But the church assures those people, the catechumens, that if they were to die prior to their baptism, that their desire for baptism would be sufficient for the grace of baptism for them. So there is not that rush to baptism in the case of an adult who has that desire. Now, infants and children are not capable of desire before a certain age, and therefore some theologians have speculated that the desire of the parents, the desire of the church for their salvation, because through no fault of their own they did not receive baptism, that it could be that desire would suffice for an infant, say, who is aborted in the womb. This is something the church has actually written on fairly recently. I think it was in 2007. The Vatican, I don't know if it was Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, but a document, and I'd have to look up the document. But
we got to take a break, so we can look the document up, we'll tell her when we get back. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Open Forum on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
This is Dale Alquist of the American Chesterton Society, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Whenever morality comes up in discussions, some atheists argue the behavior patterns we call morality are merely the product of evolution, naturally selected for the survival of our species. But is this true? The answer is no, and here are some reasons why. First, if it were true God didn't exist and our moral behaviors were merely the product of evolution, well then the dictates of our evolved nature wouldn't express the will of a being beyond man. As such, there would be nothing to morally bind man's will and thus no moral obligation. Second, what if the behaviors we judge now as wrong, such as rape and murder, become beneficial for our species in the future? According to the atheistic evolutionary account, they would have to be morally acceptable. but these conclusions are absurd. Moral obligation does exist, and rape and murder will always be wrong. Therefore, evolution is not sufficient to explain morality. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. Summer is here. That means summer reading. I have great news. Catholic Answers is having its first ever summer book sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, you can get dozens of great books offered at $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. Now is the time to load up on solid Catholic books for yourself, your friends, and your family. Save 50% or more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of great authors. And my personal favorite, all the books in our Catholic Answers Classic series are marked down as well. Log on now and all this month to the store at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our first ever summer sale. Log on today at shop.catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Open forum. We're in the home stretch now, so I'm going to get through questions as quickly as I can. Jim Blackburn, apologist, speaker, and writer, is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number. And Jim, you wanted to give some Betty had asked about the possibility of salvation for a child who was aborted in the womb. She said she believes that God would save that child, which I believe you haven't said nothing to say she can't have that belief. That's you're welcome to have that belief, but what does you wanted to give her some documents about what the church believes?
Sure, and I did mention that God has not revealed to us what happens, and so there's been theological speculation. Much earlier in the church, the theological speculation was the limbo of infants, which limbo is a word meaning fringe. It's means that the idea. The speculation was that these children never sinned themselves, but because of the stain of original sin, they don't have supernatural life. So they would live eternally in a state of natural happiness. And this natural happiness is what would be considered limbo of the infants. Excuse me. The church is kind of – theologians have moved largely away from that and recognized that through God's mercy, Jesus said, let the children come to me. And God's mercy, God can provide a way of salvation for these children that would include the beatific vision, would include supernatural life. And two resources that I'd recommend for Betty, I believe it was, is the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph in particular 1261. 1261 says that as regards children who have died without baptism, the church can only entrust them to the mercy of God and goes on from there. So I'd recommend reading that. Secondly, in 2007, the church did the International Theological Commission is who issued this document, not the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. But the International Theological Commission issued a document titled The Hope of Salvation for Infants Who Die Without Being Baptized. So you can pull that up online, and it's available on the Vatican website and other sites. And I'd recommend, if you want to do some more reading and understanding of the history of this, take a look at that. Study this document. I think it would be very helpful to you, Betty.
Thanks, Betty. We go now to Michael in Sacramento, capital of our great state of California. Your question, Michael, for Jim Blackburn.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was married in the early 80s and divorced. It was a non-Christian marriage. I had no clue about Christ at that time. And my divorce was absent any understanding of the Christian faith. After that, I became an evangelical and since then have married as an evangelical, or I should say remarried. And in the 22 years of this marriage, I have earnestly desired to become Catholic. And
wonderful.
So I have not yet completed an annulment. I have chosen for the last 3+ years to live a Josephite marriage on account of my convictions. The question is, may I receive the Eucharist not having completed an annulment and still living in a Josephite remarriage?
Okay. Great question, Michael. And but for anyone who doesn't know, and to clarify for myself as well, by Josephite marriage, you mean that you and your current wife are not engaging in conjugal relations. You're living, as the euphemism goes, as brother and sister. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. For 3 years.
Okay. Very good. To be barred from receiving the sacrament of the Eucharist, what would bar you from that is to be living in a state of perpetual ongoing sin, even just objective sin. So this is actually something, Michael, that the Church mentions in paragraph 1650 in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, that for people who are in what would be presumably an invalid marriage, if they're willing to commit to a marital continence or Josephite marriage until the situation is resolved, then they can go on to receive the sacrament of confession, you know, receive absolution through the sacrament of penance, and then go on to receive the Eucharist. In fact, in my mind, that's the only moral choice for a person in that situation to do. Until the situation is resolved, then, you know, don't live as though it's been resolved. Don't live as though you are in a marriage when it's presumable at this point that you might not be. So it sounds like you're doing the right things, Michael. And if you were to go further and enter the Church, even while an annulment was ongoing, you could, according to paragraph 1650 of the Catechism, you would be able to receive the sacraments and be fully living the sacramental life in the Catholic Church, as long as you're committed to not living in that state of perpetual, ongoing, even objective sin. So I hope that helps, Michael. I'd refer you to paragraph 1650 in the Catechism. I would also I elaborate on that in my booklet on divorce and remarriage. It's one of the 20 answers booklets, 20 answers to divorce and remarriage. I talk about this, and in fact, I would like to see paragraph 1650 kind of flip-flopped. It starts out by mentioning that, you know, if you're in an invalid marriage, you shouldn't be receiving the Eucharist, and you can't even be absolved of your sins in confession. And then it goes on kind of as almost as an afterthought to mention, unless you do this. Well, I think, no, that should be the first part. If you're in a marriage that is presumptively invalid, the first thing you need to do is rectify that situation as best you can. And by doing what you're doing, living as brother and sister until the situation can be resolved, you then free yourself to go on and receive the sacraments and fully live the sacramental life in the Church.
All right. We'll leave it there because I want to get to one more question if we can before we go to the hour. Michael, if you're still on the line and you give your address to our call screener, we'll send you that 20 Answers book for free. Margie in Virginia, listening on the Catholic Answers app. I know you've been waiting a long time. Margie, your question real quick for Jim Blackburn.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I have a Catholic friend, and she was talking that she had done some regression work, and that she went as back far as that she was seeing herself as a man, a monk, and I had never heard of that. And she says she also talked about white magic, and that didn't sit right with me.
Jim, real quick.
Yes. What I would refer her to is the book of Hebrews, chapter 9, verse 27. It's appointed for men to die once, and after that, the judgment. We do not live multiple lives. Reincarnation is not real. It's just a philosophical thought some men have come up with. But the author of the letter to the Hebrews tells us we die once, and then we're judged.
Thanks, Margie. Thanks very much for making that question so quick. Jim Blackburn, thank you so much. I had a great hour with you.
Thanks so much, Si. Great to be here.
Always appreciate it. And where people can get in touch with you, where can they go?
JimBlackburn.org or look me up on Facebook, Blackburn Jim.
Tomorrow, two great hours of live Catholic Answers coming up on Catholic Answers Live. I say that because it just left my little brain again. See you tomorrow, God willing, Catholic Answers Live.